But first, a new study by researchers in the UK has found that tiny molecules used in manufacturing could pose the same cancer risk to humans and animals as asbestos. Carbon nanotubes are long cylindrical molecules and are used in a range of applications and industries, from electronics to clothing. Our regular science correspondent Chris Smith has been following this story. G'day, Chris.
Hello, Matt.
Chris, what are carbon nanotubes and how much contact do we have with them in our day-to-day life?
Well, carbon nanotubes emerged onto the scene in the last 30 years or so. They won a Nobel Prize, actually, for researchers including Harry Kroto and others. And they are important because what these things do, they're a bit like if you take a sheet of graphene, which is a honeycomb-shaped structure of carbon atoms, a single layer of atoms thick, and you roll it up into a tube, like a roll, then that's a nanotube. And they have all kinds of important applications. And one of their applications is, for instance, in strengthening things. If you put these structures into, say, a polymer, then in the same way as you can use fiberglass to build a boat, you can produce nanotube reinforced plastics and polymers, and it gives them enormously high strengths. It enables them to dissipate energy so they don't break and splinter. So they're really, really useful. And they have other properties such as they conduct electricity, so you can do things like that with them, which means that productivity of these things is rising, the demand for them is increasing, and that means our potential exposure to them is rising, which is why it's very important to understand what the occupational and the environmental exposure risk might be. Because in the last 30 years or so, we have learned that a range of things, if we have high levels of exposure to them, can be bad for us. Asbestos is a really good example of this. We've now banned asbestos in many countries, not all. There are many countries that still allow the use of asbestos, but there are many that have banned it because it causes cancers, and it causes one rare form of cancer called mesothelioma. So what a group of researchers in England, this is Marion McFarlane from the University of Leicester and her colleagues, wanted to know is, do these nanotubes, which in many respects are quite similar to asbestos in terms of their size and scale and the fact that they could be breathed in, do they pose a similar threat? And what they're publishing in the journal Current Biology, hot off the press this week, is the answer, yes, they could, under certain circumstances, trigger the same sorts of lung damage and spectrum of lung injuries and mesothelioma, this rare chest wall cancer, that asbestos can.
So they found that there were tumours in the animals that were used in this research?
Yes, the nature of the experiment, what they did, and it's a slightly artificial situation because in order to make sure that the animals were exposed to a known dose of these things, they actually injected into the pleural cavity, which is the space between the lung and the chest wall, a known concentration of these nanotubes. They compared short ones and long ones because you can grow these nanotubes to variable lengths. So they wanted to know if there is a difference. They also did the same experiment with asbestos, almost as though they wanted a positive control in order to see what happens if you do this with something that's known to cause this damage. What they found in their animals was that after 18 months of following them, about a third of the animals with the asbestos had got tumours. In the animals that got the long form of the nanotubes, about a third of the animals had tumours. In those animals that were exposed only to the very short nanotubes, those were dealt with and cleared up by the immune system without any kind of consequences. And the interesting thing about this study is, apart from proving that these nanotubes in this setting do appear to trigger cancer, probably by the same mechanisms as asbestos, they've also gone a step further and looked in molecular detail at what the immune system's doing and what genes are being affected in the cells that are being turned into cancers in these animals. And there's a very interesting mechanism that seems to have emerged, which is that when the animal is exposed, including a human animal potentially, to these nanotubes, because they're long and thin, they're like razor sharp needles that embed their way in the lung tissue, and the immune system cannot get rid of them. And what happens is that you drive chronic rounds of inflammation in the tissue. These cells come in to try and remove these particles. They can't, they get frustrated, and they recruit more cells to come in and try and remove them. And these cycles of inflammation produce lots of toxic oxygen species as part of the inflammatory process. This in turn damages the DNA of the surrounding cells. and including deactivating genes called tumour suppressor genes. And these tumour suppressor genes are like a brake on cell growth. If you deactivate them, you take away that brake, and then you've got a runaway train. And that's how they think these things turn into cancer. And that's and so it's a worry that nanotubes can do this. But at the same time, as Marion McFarlane points out, it does highlight mechanisms by which both asbestos and nanotubes could cause cancer. And therefore, it opens up potentially new therapeutic avenues to us as well.
But just back on the manufacturing of them, do you think it'll lead to any changes in the science and the development of nanoparticles?
Well, the point that Marion McFarlane made to me when I spoke to her was that unlike asbestos, which we dig up out of the ground, nanotubes are manufactured, and therefore we can make them safe by design. So we make sure that we minimise exposure when we're making them, so occupational exposure can be minimised, and also that the species of them that we make and the way in which we design them, we could, now we know this information, we can make sure we try and minimise exposure to the more harmful forms and use the ones which her own experiments show were safer.
So in Europe, a boy with an incurable disease, he's been given a second chance after researchers were able to grow genetically modified skin to cover 80% of his body. Can you describe the skin condition the boy had and what his prognosis was when he first presented with a bad infection at a children's hospital in Germany?
Yes, this is a remarkable story, and it's a remarkable story on several levels, because not only did it save someone's life, and it was a complete shot in the dark for the German doctors that did it, also it was the bringing together of stem cell biology and gene therapy all rolled into one experiment. Now, the seven-year-old boy, he was seven at the time in 2015 when this happened, he had a condition which is called junctional epidermolysis bullosa, JEB. It's very rare, but this is caused by an inherited or a genetic defect in a handful of genes that anchor the top layer of your skin, the epidermis, to the deeper layer, the dermis. If these anchor proteins go wrong, then even trivial injuries that you and I would brush off cause terrible injury to the skin, and they cause the top layer of the skin to be sloughed or ripped off. And this leads to ulceration, it leads to terrible scarring, it's exquisitely painful. And because you're damaging your best defence against the outside world, you develop overwhelming infections with things like Staphylococcus aureus, golden staph. This little boy presented to the hospital in Germany with a severe exacerbation of this disease. And he lost, at the time of presentation, 60% of his skin from across his body.
But they were able to replace it with a gene therapy technique.
Exactly. So what they did was, by the time he actually went to surgery, he'd lost 80% of his skin. They found one patch of skin in his groin, which was still intact. They took a biopsy of that skin, extracted from the skin the keratinocyte stem cells that make skin, and then they used a virus that had been made harmless and modified to carry a healthy copy of the gene that was defective in this boy and causing his condition, a gene called LAMB3. The keratinocytes were then grown in the dish where they produced healthy new sheets of epidermis. In fact, they turned that 4-centimeter squared biopsy they took into about a square meter of new surface skin for this boy. And rather like a patchwork quilt, they put these sheets onto him over his whole body over the space of 2 or 3 months. And they've now followed him up. And he, 2 years on, he is healthy. He has normal skin. He's at school. He plays football. If he cuts himself, he heals normally without any problems. He's not on any medication. And critically, they've now done studies looking at this replacement skin to check that the addition of the healthy copy of this gene has not damaged the genetic integrity of the cells. And there's no evidence it has. There's no evidence that it has disrupted any normal genes that you would rely on for healthy action in those cells. So it looks like a fantastic result.
That's fantastic. Excellent. All right. Well, thank you, Chris.
Thank you very much.
That's Chris Smith, our science correspondent. And of course, you can hear Chris on The Naked Scientists right here on RN at 10 p.m. this evening, or podcast his show anytime.